hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. I believe this is episode number 38. This is Jeff Janey, and I welcome you all. Along with me today is my co-host, Jacob. Jacob, how are you doing?
I am doing great. I just took literally the hottest day of the year and dug a 50-foot long trench. So, you know, I think maybe I need my brain checked. But other than that, I'm great.
Why? Just why?
I was asking myself about 25 feet into the dig. Why are we doing this? Apparently, we need drainage. It's a thing, well, right?
I don't think that that's necessarily a realistic time frame to look at whether or not you need drainage. Everyone right now needs drainage. I'm not sure that you really need drainage.
Well, that is true. But okay, so Indiana,
you could have spent better time building an ark, and I think probably covered yourself better.
That is true. And for those of you who are not in the mecca of rain, Indiana has been getting deluged this summer. It has been bizarre. And so I had to get into the crawl space a few weeks ago and noticed that it was quite dank even. And so that precipitated my girlfriend saying, gosh darn it, we are going to put drainage in and get those downspouts a-flowing. And unfortunately, we picked the hottest weekend like in the last year. Literally, I'm not even exaggerating. It has been hotter in the last 2 days than it has been in the last 12 months. And by golly, we got out and dug. And it was supposed to rain. There was 100% chance of rain today. And guess what it didn't do one drop of? No, it did not rain. It was 100% chance of extra hot sun. I'm pretty sure the sun was the weight of the shovel was pulling the sun slightly closer to our location, and it was miserable.
I do want to point out that the day is not over yet. So
that is true, but it is over for me. I am going to record with you and hopefully make it the 20 feet to the bedroom to pass out. That is what is happening. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing good. I did not do anything outside today. I did grill. That was the length of my time outside. We did walk around a little bit. We went down to an outlet mall, did some back-to-school clothes shopping for the families, and it was outside walking, but it was mostly in the shade, so it wasn't too bad.
But it was just a gosh-awful muggy day. It was brutal.
Yeah. Man. So I just wanted to remind everyone, they can call in and leave us comments, questions, rants, how do you do's. They could do that by calling 317-643-1212.
Yeah. It has been a long time since we've had a how do you do.
I know. I'm not feeling the love right now. So come on, guys. Step it up. Call in. Just say hey.
And you've only got a couple of weeks left to get a fantastic show t-shirt. So if you want to support the show and if you want to look amazing while you're doing it, you can have a t-shirt that makes people go, hey, what is that fancy thing that you have emblazoned upon your chest? And you can say, why, good sir, that is one of the finest tech podcasts you will put into your ears. And people will say, ah, you are a man of stature in the community. And you can do that by going to imperialshirtco.com and pick up a shirt. We get a couple of bucks. It helps the show keep going. You get an awesome t-shirt. We would love if you would support us. That would be awesome. And if you don't like t-shirts for some reason, if you are truly a paragon of the community and only preamble about in three-piece woolen suits, that is, then you could even throw us a couple of shekels by going to our Patreon page. And, you know, you could give us as little as a buck. You could give us a Maserati if you are Bill Gates. We're still waiting for someone to pledge a Maserati. And you can, and we're going to be waiting a long time.
Yes, we are. But by golly, it's good to have goals.
It sure is. And you could do that by going to Patreon.com/KnowBetterShow, and that is patreon.com. Jeff, I think we have some updates for songs that people hate.
I think we do. What was the one? Blah, 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 blah.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, I know. So I forget which ones we went through last time.
Okay, I know we talked about ours. I think we've got a Nickelback song from Brian W. who says he hates Figured You Out. I don't know that one specifically, but it's Nickelback. So I'm right there with you, Brian. No problems at all.
So I have a question. And, you know, I hate to say that. Am I the only person in the world that doesn't hate Nickelback?
I think so.
Because I hear everyone talking about how much they hate Nickelback. I don't hate them. I went listening to this song because I was like, oh, let's see how horrible this song is. I found it kind of catchy. I'm sorry.
Okay, we found the fan, the one fan that is somehow keeping Nickelback
a thing. I'm not saying that, like, I go out and listen to all the Nickelback I possibly can. I'm just saying it's a rocky pop song that's about women and stuff.
That's why this is so subjective, because it's not the song that you hate, it's the song that Brian hates.
That's true. I know, but everyone hates Nickelback. Like, that's like a running thing, right?
It is.
And I just guess I don't understand.
The lead singer is just a really douchey guy. I remember several years ago, I read the interview with him in Playboy, and he just came across as a cocky, arrogant guy, which I suppose you want some of that in your rock and roller, but he didn't engender himself. I wasn't rooting for him.
But like, I felt like Brian tweeted this song and he included the video, and the video is very, I would almost call it poison-esque. Like, I think Nickelback is the poison of the aughts.
Is that I can't tell if that's a good thing to be or not.
Like, here's the thing, like, you know, poison they were chauvinistic jerk douchebags too.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that their music wasn't kind of rocking. I don't know. I just, like, I watched the video. I'm like, hey, this isn't all that bad. I'm sorry.
No, that's, I suppose that is a fair way of looking at it. But again, this is why it is not your least favorite song.
That's true. Okay. Fair enough.
And we've got Close to You by the Carpenters from Melissa S. And I don't know, I'm kind of on the bubble with that one. I don't hate it, but I don't want to hear it every single day.
I'd like it better if Karen Carpenter were just so darn fat.
Why is it too soon? When did she die? Like in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
No. I feel like the statute of limitations on Karen Carpenter is dead and fat jokes. Like, go for it. Whatever you want.
Okay.
I like this song, Loving You by Minnie Riperton from Ellen. You know, that's a good song. I like it. I don't know why she doesn't like it.
I think it's those really high pitchy, squeaky rat notes.
Maybe, but I like the song. Just me, but that's okay. Yeah, Ellen can hate it. I usually like her taste in music, but not this time. This one I agree with, and I think a lot of our fans are going to agree with, because I re-listened to it. Like, my sister was right in the right age for New Kids on the Block, and the song is Please Don't Go Girl by New Kids on the Block, NKOTB, and that comes from my girlfriend, and oh my gosh, it is such a bad song. Like, I'm sure I hated it 20 years ago, and I double hate it now. It's awful. I mean, just awful. Hanging Tough, no better. New Kids on the Block did not age well. No.
Yeah, no.
Nope. And then the last one is Cherry Bomb by The Runaways, and that was submitted by Paul, who wrote, yes, it's catchy, but maybe if they'd spent another 5 minutes writing their signature song, I would feel less embarrassed for them listening to it. I like Cherry Bomb. It's a mindless little girl pop hit song from the, 70s?
Yeah. I don't mind it. I mean, it's, you know, not my favorite song in the whole world, but I wouldn't list it as my worst song. But that's, again, I think what's going to make this kind of interesting, folks.
Yeah.
Send in your least favorite song so we can totally disagree with you.
Well, and, you know, I was
thinking. Or not.
And I was thinking about this, Jeff. So we're asking people to send in songs that they actively dislike. Now, while they may like the other songs that our listeners submit, are they going to download and listen to a playlist that at some point is going to play at random the song that they most dislike?
Well, that's what the skip button's for, right?
I suppose that's true.
Because, you know, that stupid Genesis song that's on our best songs? Yeah, that's an automatic skip. Automatic. Boom.
All right. So keep sending them in, folks. I don't know that we've given them a deadline to we're going to compile this, have we?
How about we go with once we get up to 15 songs or August 15th. There.
All right. So you got about a month.
Got about a month.
All right. We're putting you on blast, everybody.
I think we got 19 songs for our favorites. I'd like to do that again. Let's build on this. Let's get more than that this time.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
And then we'll come up with another music list to go with, and we can keep doing this. I think it's kind of fun. Because I listen to the heck out of our best songs.
Yeah, I've listened to it a couple times. Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe we could do like best song by decade.
Ooh.
Like what's your favorite hit of the 20s? And I don't mean the 2020s.
No.
It's some ragtime. I think
it might be Mack the Knife. Mack the Knife.
When maybe did that come out? Some Scott Joplin in the 30s.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So you had an interesting thing happen to you this week, Jeff. Talk to me about some privacy that everybody needs to check on their settings of.
So, yeah, I had an interesting thing happen to me this last week. I happened to take some personal time from work, and I had a stalker. Yeah.
Because you're just so damn sexy.
Well, you know, I can't think of anything better than to do than to trace where I am in the world at all times. But yeah, so
there's an app for that. I've written it. I'm the writer of it.
Yeah.
It's called Where Jeff At.
Where Jeff At. I guess I happen to have some settings on in Google that I didn't necessarily pay as close attention to as I should have. So I'm just going to kind of throw out a warning to you people. If any of you have Google Plus, and you don't even have to have Google Plus on your phone, which is what threw me for a loop. If you have in Google Plus, there is a setting on Google Plus where that you can tell people in circles where you're at. And there's two settings. There's a kind of a generic level. So it might say, Jeff is at Indianapolis. Ah, okay, fair enough. You know, that narrows it down to, you know, 400 square miles or so.
Yeah.
probably feel pretty good about that. And you know, you can say you want to share it with all circles. You can say, I only want to share it with a specific set of circles. You can say no one. I mean, no one's an option. And then there's also a very granular to the point of Jeff is at Hardee's on this street at this, you know, I mean, like specifically right where you're
sitting
at.
Sitting in table 37.
That's right. And I actually happened to have that set on to share to all circles. And I did not realize that. And, you know, shame on me. I should have been more careful. I've since changed that to only share with my family, which I don't care if my family knows that I'm at Hardee's at table 37. Because I had that setting set to all circles, I happen to have this individual in a circle, which was coworkers, actually. And he was able to, not because I don't have Google Plus on my phone, which is the interesting part.
Okay.
But I do have Google and Google Maps.
And they're all linked together.
And it's all linked together because I want Google to pop up and say, hey, Jeff, I know you're going to XYZ at 4 o'clock and there's traffic. You need to leave now.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing I want. Because I had that setting on that Google could share my location or see my location at all times, it was sharing that with Google Plus, and therefore this individual happened to be able to go on Google Plus and track where I was. And it's creepy enough that happened, but then even worse, in my opinion, he chose to share that with everybody in the department about where I was, which, you know, in and of itself, again, shame on me for not being careful, but this goes out to shame on him for A, being creepy, and B, sharing personal information with people. If I wanted people to know where I was, oddly enough, I would have told them myself.
Yeah.
So, you know, congratulations. You're a jerk. If you're listening to this, I still think you're a jerk. And there you go.
The Calling Out Podcast.
I'm not going to say his name, but he knows who he is, and he's a jerk.
Well, yeah. So my point was, though, I had no idea that Google Plus did that by default. And, you know, if you use Google services, everybody, you need to be aware of that. Maybe check for yourself, because I don't think I had my sharing set to all circles, but I did have location reporting enabled with Google, because, again, that Google app that can pop up and say, hey, you know, you normally leave for home about now and traffic is especially heavy. And then I can go, oh, well, I'll take a different route home. That's a really great feature, and I want those things. But on the flip side of that, I don't necessarily want really anybody to know where I'm at a granular level. So, you know, check your settings. You can never be too careful. And privacy is so hard to come by these days. I mean, we are giving it away willingly. And, you know, these other, you know, settings and things like that, that most of us never look at. If we're lucky, we look at them when we're setting them up and then never look at them again. you know, they can make it so that you're broadcasting a lot more about yourself than you think you might
be. And, you know, I've always said I don't really care if people go and look. And quite honestly, I wouldn't have necessarily, I mean, I still would have thought it was a little creepy if he went and looked at where I was, but I probably wouldn't have cared. But the biggest part was don't share that with everybody.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, it, I mean, it just, there's no reason for it. And, you know, in the end, it's not the end of the world. And where I was is not going to be any secret to anybody, you know, in the next few days because of situations that have come up. But it's just a matter of, you know, it's to a certain point, you know, yes, protect yourself, but God, you know, human beings, be decent. You know, think about what you're doing when you're going to do something like that. Because to me, yes, you know, I should be more careful. And yes, Google shared information with me that, you know, maybe I wasn't as careful as I should have been. But I don't blame Google. And I blame the person that did it. I mean, have some common decency.
Yeah, social norms definitely. I don't even want to say this is a case of social norms because it's not really a case of we need to catch up with what technology has enabled. But, you know, just, you know, don't talk about things that you know that maybe other people don't want you to know.
Let's take this out of technology. Let's say that you're eating lunch somewhere and you see someone sitting there talking to somebody. You don't go blabbing around saying, oh, guess who I saw? Guess who I saw? That's gossiping and it's not cool.
Well, some people do that though.
Yeah, I understand people do that, but don't. It's not okay. That's not, I mean, that's not an okay thing.
No, it's not. And good point. Yeah.
I mean, you know, have some common frickin' decency and, you know, keep your nose where it belongs. It's none of your business. And there's no reason to do that kind of stuff. I
agreed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, off the soapbox, I just wanted to have everybody just do a quick check. Check your security. Make sure that you're not broadcasting your location afar. And that's
if you
all.
Go under to Google Plus and settings, down towards the bottom, there's location sharing. And then if you want to make sure Google's not sharing stuff from your phone, you can go into the settings there on location and security and change it there as well. So,
yep. Check your stuff, people.
Yep.
You've got a story on here that I thought was interesting because I haven't heard anything about it. Talk to me about Obama saying the internet is a necessity.
Yeah, so he was giving a speech in, I believe it was Oklahoma. He was giving a speech, and I just happened to catch an article about it online, and I listened to the snippet that they had. Just basically, it was him talking about how, you know, current internet availability tends to skew very racially divided, and he was pointing out that we need to do a better job of getting the internet to everyone, and that. That at this point in, you know, the, you know, human
civilization,
that internet is not just a right or, you know, not just something that it should be available or can be available, that it's a necessity for people to have to further their education, to further their social standing and
to get a job in a lot of cases.
Yeah. So this is actually something that I think I've mentioned on the show. And if I haven't, it's only just because we haven't brought the issue up.
No, you have. You're in favor of nationalized internet.
I am. I am, absolutely. And this actually kind of, you know, is a thing that I very much agree with Obama on. I think the internet is an absolute necessity. I think that it helps educate people. Like you said, it helps people find jobs. And quite honestly, I would like to see this go out to everyone.
Yeah.
So some interesting information that I found in the article that 1 in 4 people in the U.S. currently do not have internet access.
You know, and that's shocking to me because that's a bigger number than I would have guessed.
Yeah. And so there is a program called Connect Home, and it's a project that has been set up to try to bring internet access to all homes with school-aged children. One of the things that he mentioned was talking about how it would seem to be racially divided. And there's some statistics out there that based on the 1 in 4 number, you know, that's 75% people have internet access. And it broken down, 87% of Asians have internet access.
Okay.
77% of whites.
Okay.
67% of Hispanics.
Okay.
61% Black, 58% Native American.
Wow.
So there's a big drop off. Like,
absolutely.
You know, there. And you know, part of this Connect Home thing, there's some companies out there, and I just kind of wanted to mention, you know, we give some people a bad rap a lot. I did notice that your favorite Comcast and Xfinity was not listed anywhere about giving anything, you know, towards this. But Google, now they're only in, I think, 4 or 5 markets right now.
Right.
But with Google Fiber, they're actually offering free internet service with no installation fee, no money per month for anyone in current public housing authority buildings.
Okay.
And they're currently seeing a 90% adoption rate in those markets.
Well, sure. I mean, why wouldn't you take it?
Well, I mean, there are some people who don't want that in their house. And yeah. You know, I mean, that's fine. That's their choice. But I thought that was very interesting. Sprint, AT&T, and Verizon are actually allowing people to get free wireless broadband service to anyone that lives in HUD supported housing.
Wow.
If they have a K-12 student. That's part of what's called Connect Ed. So
are there limitations on that, or is it pretty wide open?
It's pretty wide open. So if you know anyone that fits that category and they don't have internet, they need to get in touch with Sprint, AT&T, or Verizon. Now that's wireless, so it's not the fastest necessarily.
Yeah, but it beats better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. And then also Cox Communications and CenturyLink are currently offering low-priced options, $10 to $15 a month for people that fall into HUD-eligible housing. So another thing to keep in mind. But I call out to, you know, all cable company providers, all internet providers, you know, we need to make this happen. And quite honestly, you know, make it happen, or I think that the government should take over. I mean, I think it's something everybody should have. So I guess, you know, if anyone out there in the cable industry is listening, maybe you should give it away for free so that the government doesn't come after you, because I honestly think, you know, that's something that needs to happen.
So, you know, it's really interesting that you mentioned that Google and Sprint, AT&T and Verizon and Cox and CenturyLink are all have these programs and are all doing things like this, which is great. But it's all with public housing and with HUD, which, you know, that is, I don't know the percentages of housing out there that is HUD housing or is, you know, public authority housing, but it's, you know, that's still got to be cutting a large number of people who, you know, are barely making ends meet, but maybe they can pay the rent and keep the power on, but that's about it. And they don't have, you know, cable or a telephone or internet, and they may not qualify under that. It would be nice to see if there was some sort of way to expand that, not just for people in, you know, public housing or HUD HUD housing, but to people who meet, you know, guidelines, income guidelines, maybe
income guidelines need to happen. Maybe there needs to be a tax credit for people in a certain income bracket and lower to get that internet. Something needs to happen, because, I mean, quite honestly, it does help better people, and it gives people the opportunity to get out there and you know, learn themselves,
you know,
for want of better words.
You say tax credit, and that's interesting, though, because, you know, coming from your position, which is, you know, solidly middle class, and a tax credit at the end of the year is a great thing. You know, is that enough for somebody who's, you know, trying to scrape by? I mean, I don't feel like a tax credit at the end of the year to help offset the cost of buying internet is going to be a real incentivizer. I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. There should be some program or plan in place, especially for homes with, like you said, school-age children. That should just be a no-brainer. And really for everybody, because, gosh, I can't even imagine if I had to choose, you know, what I would give up before I would give up the internet. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I would cut out a lot of stuff in my life before I would eliminate the internet, because it is such a necessity. And I mean, it's, you know, it helps you find a job. It helps educate you. It entertains you. I mean, it is such a powerful tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know what the answer is, but I agree. There needs to be more done. You know, maybe build a few less bombs and put some of that money into internet for the, you know, people less fortunate.
Yes.
I came across an article a few weeks ago that got me thinking a little bit. And this is, we're going to switch from politics, because we've been talking a lot about politics, to some tech. And anyway, this article got me thinking. And it was titled, "What was the greatest piece of tech that failed in the marketplace?" And, you know, just I was thinking about all the cool tech gadgets that I lusted after that either, you know, made a splash and went away or just never managed to get any traction, and wanted to kind of throw it out there and find out from some of our listeners what were some of their holy grail gadgets or technology. And I know for me, I can throw this out there. There was a device built by a company called B Computing, and it was headed up by Jean-Louis Gasset, who was a Apple. I don't remember if he ran Apple for a short time, but he was an executive at Apple, left and created a company called B, and they created a computer called the B Box. And I wanted one so bad. It was just an amazing piece of technology for its day. It ran a really inventive and innovative operating system called BOS, which I actually ran on my PC for like 18 months. I was a devoted B-head. And you know, if there was a Chrome build for, because there are homebrew, there's like an open source B operating system out there called Haiku OS. And if there was Chrome for that, I would be running that on my computer today. It was just amazing. So I really miss that. Like the mini disc, I had a couple of different mini disc players, and that was amazing. It's a shame that it died. Is there anything that you lusted hard after, Jeff?
So I actually had two Sony mini disc players, and I loved them.
Weren't they great?
I did. Yeah, they were the best. And I just, you know, I had a portable one, and I had one at home.
Ooh, a fancy one.
Yeah. And I just, man, I loved those things. And I ripped a lot of CDs to mini discs, to be honest with you.
I did too.
And I loved that thing. And, you know, you would have thought I would have learned after Betamax, because I was a huge, I was all in on Betamax too.
Yeah.
We had three Betamax players at our house.
Oh, big spenders.
Yeah.
Those were not cheap.
No, but they were wonderful, and it was such a great machine. And that thing lasted, I swear, that we got that when I was, I must have been in eighth grade.
Okay.
When those came out. And I took that thing to college. So, I mean, I had that thing for 10 to 12 years.
But what on earth did you play on it? Because they didn't make movies that long.
I would record TV.
Oh, okay.
I would record shows and then watch them. And then eventually, I mean, I had about 15 or 20 movies that I had bought on Betamax. And I played the hell out of those things. Dragon Slayer, that was one of them. And finally, after I got out of college, I ended up donating that to a school.
Okay.
And as far as I know, it's still working 20 something years later. I'm telling you, that thing was a machine. That thing was so well built.
So this will blow your mind, but on eBay right now, you can buy 10 blank Betamax video cassette tapes for $29.50. Actually, if you go on eBay and search for Betamax, there is a ton of stuff out there. So it obviously has its followers still, which is just insane in this world of HD. I don't even own a VCR anymore.
Oh, really?
No, I have a VCR in that.
Oh, look, you can get a factory sealed in box Sony Betamax player for $690 on eBay.
I don't know why you aren't clicking buy it now, right now.
I'm looking to see. So the Beta, oh my God. Yeah.
Oh, here's a used one for $99. It's got four bids on it. You would be the proud owner.
Yeah, I know. We had one.
And you'd get divorced.
Yeah, no kidding. God, they were such great machines. They really were. It's such a shame.
I miss the Betamax format. I had a lot of mini discs, and I was big on the zip drive. I had a lot of stuff on zip drive, and kind of lost the format wars on that one. But yeah, there's so much great stuff out there. There's, you know, like I said, BOS. There was Next. I wanted one of those square Next computers so bad. The Apple Newton, which I guess we kind of have. It's much younger and much better brother in the iPhone today and the iPad. But gosh, I had one, two, three different Apple message pads, Apple Newton message pads. They were amazing. You put the Concorde, like the airplane?
Yeah.
I dreamed that I would fly on the Concorde, and obviously I don't have like $10,000. The Atari Jaguar.
It's gone now, right?
It is. It is, I think, completely mothballed.
That was amazing, right?
It was. And I think it was right after the accident, right? They shuttered the fleet. And it was the only accident? I don't remember. I'd have to look that up.
How about the Zoom? That was actually a pretty decent piece of hardware.
And it still has its devotees. People still love it, despite the fact that like the Zune store has been shut down and there is nothing like officially Zune left anymore.
Not on our list here, but what about the Sega Dreamcast?
Oh, I loved my Dreamcast. That was a great console.
Yeah, but I mean it died a painful death, right?
It only was out there for 5 years, maybe. And it was a great console that just never realized itself. And you talk about the Zune. This is interesting. So my girlfriend's mother just asked if she could help her find an MP3 player for her mother's sister. And if you want just an MP3 player, mm-hmm. like there is literally nothing out there other than an iPod or some higher end Sony MP3 players, and right. then there is like $10 crap. And so she had like looked for quite a while on Amazon and found one that seemed to have good reviews, and it was like $26, and she pulled the trigger on it and we got it in. And her cousin, or her, well, I guess it would be her aunt, has no computer skills really whatsoever. So her mother was like, hey, can you open it? Can you load some MP3s on it? And that would be great. And it was just garbage. Like it took, and I am not exaggerating, it took 15 seconds from the time you turned the switch on until the time that the menu came up. And like, there's nothing out there.
I'm just like sitting here trying to rack my brain on the, I used to have the MP3 player I had before I bought any iPod.
Was it a Diamond?
No.
Diamond made a bunch. SanDisk still makes some.
No, it wasn't SanDisk.
Rio? Oh, gosh,
it's just on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, there were a bunch.
There were, but this was, God bless it. Why can I not think? Because I love that player. Because they don't make them
because
anymore,
we're talking about it and they don't make it. Yeah. It wasn't the, I'm thinking of one too that I cannot for the life of me. The Zen? Is it the Zen?
Yes, it was the Zen.
It had a run there for I think about 5 years, and it's been gone for. That was Creative, wasn't it? I think the Creative Zen.
Yeah, Creative Zen.
Yeah, no, they are no more.
That was an amazing one. I remember I bought an Alpine car stereo system that would let me plug my Creative Zen in, and it was an amazing MP3 player. It was really great.
Did you have a feathered haircut and a soft top that you were like the wind was blowing?
Give me
your
a break.
Hair.
Wasn't that? No, you know what? It was the Creative Nomad.
Oh, yeah, the Nomad. I think that one preceded the Zen, right?
Yeah, it was called the Creative Nomad Jukebox Zen Extra. It was 40 gigabytes.
Wow, that was big.
Yeah, it came out in 2003. I mean, you know, it was, you know, iPods were a thing then, but I didn't pull the plug on the iPod, but I loved that machine. That was a great machine.
Yeah, I have had a long history of buying technology way too early, and I think hopefully I'm not saying this in 5 years about the Apple Watch, but I actually ordered I think it was Diamond. If it wasn't Diamond to start with, they bought the company, but I ordered a Rio PMP 300 in 1998. I think I paid like $300 for it. You had to hook it up to the serial port of your computer.
Wow.
It had 32 megabytes of memory and had a memory card slot that you could put, I think, an additional 32 megabytes in. And it was ridiculously expensive. It was I think it was maybe one of the very first commercially available MP3 players. And you know what? It was actually a great little device. Like it was built like a tank. But that has succumbed to time. I no longer have that, but I do miss it. It was a great little device that I paid entirely too much money for.
Wow.
There's a lot of examples. So if you have an example of tech that you loved and just fell by the wayside, you know, why don't you shoot us an email or send us a tweet or something like that? We would love to kind of know what it was that you guys loved. So I saw a neat thing. You may remember IBM's Watson.
Yes.
Yes. No, maybe.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm totally waxing nostalgic, obviously, over here on my Creative Nomad. I found one for $60 on eBay.
I think that you should buy it.
No, I don't think I should, but okay. Yes, that's IBM Watson. Funny. That's the computer that played Jeopardy, right?
Yes, and I think won handily. Okay, so yes, so Watson, the Jeopardy-playing supercomputer, had been put to work analyzing medical stuff. Basically, it was reading huge swaths of medical journals and I think medical cases and looking for connections so that someone could basically put a case in and say, I've got this case. I don't know what it is. Why don't you look at it and then cross-reference everything with your huge, massive library and give me some ideas? Well, anyway, so it is still a thing and IBM is still working on it. And they have now taught Watson to read the tone of an email or a text, basically. It will sift through and compare what you have written based on its emotional and social tone and the writing style. And it can work out if what you have submitted to it is cheerful, negative, angry. It can classify it whether it considers it open, agreeable, conscientious. And then it can lastly offer analytical advice on how to maybe tweak the text to make something that is angry less so, or something that might be closed or disagreeable more open or agreeable.
Can I use this? Is this something that I can use?
It's really neat.
I feel like I need that sometimes.
Well, you definitely can tell it still feels a bit beta-y, and there is an API. Now, I am not a programmer. Fortunately, there are smart people that are, and they have written an interface to it that you can go and paste your text into, and it will analyze it, and it will show you the breakdown. And it's really interesting. I was playing with it, and I went and actually put a copy of one of the blog entries from our podcast in, and it said it was a very agreeable and open. And then I went and I dug through my email and dug through my email, and I found one where I remember being clearly agitated when I sent it, and I put it in, and it said that it was angry and non-agreeable and close. And so, yeah, it works great. And so you can play with it.
I can feel like if you take anything that I write in general, it's going to say that.
Well, you got to give it enough text. So, I mean, I you got to give it longer things. And one thing that I think anybody who knows me will say is I am guilty of excessive verbosity. Yeah, you can play with yourself.
I would agree with what you just said if I knew what you just said, but that's okay.
If you go to HTTPS, so you got to have the S there because it's a secure website, okay, and then go to tone-analyzer-demo.mybluemix.net. That is tone-analyzer-demo.mybluemix.net. And you can give it your own text and it will read it and tell you all about yourself. And like I said, it's really interesting. I mean, it's amazing to see how they have taken this and are, applying it towards, being able to read the emotion in written text, which is A, amazing, and B, a little scary. We shouldn't be teaching computers so damn much, because when the machines rise up, they will know how to make us cry before they crush us beneath them in their relentless pursuit to step on our skulls like in Terminator.
Nice. So
that's, yeah, I found that very interesting.
Hey.
Bacon.
Let's move.
No bacon?
No, not. I'm just looking at the time. I want to make sure we get Prime Day in. Let's talk about Prime Day.
All right, but I want to talk about bacon because I'm excited about that. Prime Day.
Well, we can always hold bacon later. Prime Day is topical.
Okay, Prime Day.
So, Prime Day.
Prime Day. Woo! Prime Day.
Yeah, so that was...
That was a thing.
Yeah, it was July 15th, right?
It was. Right? It was just last week.
Yeah, just last week. Amazon announced for their, I believe, 20th anniversary,
yep,
that they were going to have Prime Day, and they were going to have all these great deals, better than Black Friday. Oh my gosh, cats and dogs living together. I mean, so they saw a worldwide order growth of 266% over the same day last year.
That's insane.
18% more than Black Friday from 2014.
That's even more insane.
Yeah. So they weren't really sure whether or not Black Friday was going to be like this one time, hey, let's give this one, 120th anniversary. But based on everything that they did on Wednesday, I'm pretty sure that we can say that we're going to see a Black Friday every year, right? Or I mean, an Amazon Prime Day every year.
So if Black Friday is Black Friday, would you call this like just Gold Wednesday? Because they were making all of the gold.
Yeah. So. some of the things that they, you know, highlighted out, they remember, and one thing to remember, these are only Amazon Prime members.
Yeah.
So, you know, Black Friday, anyone shops Black Friday, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
On Amazon. This was only for Prime members. And so they said they sold tens of thousands of Fire Sticks in 1 hour, and it made it the fastest selling deal on an Amazon device ever.
Which, if you don't have one of those Fire TV sticks, you should get one. They are awesome little devices. And I was tempted. I didn't, but I was tempted to buy another one just to have another one because they were only like $24.
Yeah. We own one, so we didn't order another one. But yeah, yeah. They sold 56,000 copies of the Lord of the Rings motion picture trilogy set. I mean, that's a lot of walking. I mean,
that is a lot of walking.
They sold 47,000 televisions, which is 13,000% over.
No, 1,300%.
Okay, 1,300% year over year growth.
Which is still insane.
Yeah, absolutely. 51,000 pairs of Bose headphones.
Yeah, the part that I love is compare that to the previous Wednesday when they sold 8.
Yeah.
Not 8,000, not 800, 8.
They sold 24,000 Instapot pressure cookers.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
I don't either. They sold 182.
It's not just a pressure cooker, but a programmable pressure cooker.
They sold 182 the previous Wednesday. They sold 14,000 Roombas, the pet vacuum cleaning robot, model 595. 14,000 the previous Wednesday, one.
Yeah, and those were still, I think, close to $300.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not cheap.
And look, listen to this. 12,000 copies of 50 Shades of Grey on Blu-ray. Really? Like,
you know,
I feel like 12,000 people didn't go see 50 Shades of Grey at the movie theater.
Well, they certainly bought the book. I think it was a huge seller.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, compared to 121 the previous Wednesday, yeah. I mean, that's insane.
So I guess what we're trying to say is they sold lots of stuff and things.
Well, again, the fact that this was only Prime members, that just boggles my mind. And I know Amazon has never said how many Prime members they have other than it is in the tens of millions. So I think a lot of people have, you know, done all kinds of machinations to try and figure out what that means. Does that mean 10 million? Does it mean 90 million? Does it mean 50 million or whatever it is? And I don't know that anybody has a specific number, but to sell that amount of stuff, even if they've got 50 million customers, that's a lot of stuff. Now, I will say this. I kind of kept my eye on it on and off throughout the day. I didn't see anything that I was just salivating to buy. I did order something. It was not anything that was on the Prime Day deals list. So I didn't actually take advantage, but I saw a couple of deals that were really good. And unfortunately, everything that I saw, like by the time I saw it and clicked onto the item, it was already 100% claimed. And I joined about 3 wait lists. And unfortunately, my name was not called on any of the wait lists. So people lost their damn mind and they were buying everything.
So I did. I bought a rope light, a 10-foot rope light of blue LEDs. We've been wanting to do some rope lighting along one of the steps on our porch, so that at night it lights up and you know there's a step there. So I did order one of those. I ordered. They had a deal on gift cards where if you bought a 3-pack of gift cards, that you got $10 in store credit. So I did order 3 $15 gift cards.
When I went and looked at it, they were sold out. They only had the $25 gift cards. And I was like, I don't really want to sit $75 tied up there for some indeterminate amount of time. Not that I won't spend it, but that's a lot of money to just have sitting there to get $10 back. If they would have had $15 ones, I would have gotten that.
Yeah, I lucked in. I got the 15 ones. I bought some coffee, some Keurig K-Cup coffees. I got 36 for $20.
Oh, that's not bad. Less than a buck.
Yeah, less than a buck a piece. I think that's all I ordered. No, I ordered a fan. So my daughter needed a stand fan for her room. So I ordered her a Honeywell fan. And I think that's it. I did end up buying, I used that $10 credit towards a wireless mouse. Later in the week, ended up getting an Amazon Basics wireless mouse for $1.49.
That's a good deal.
with that credit that I ended up getting. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't go crazy. There were a couple times where, man, I had a TV up there, and my finger was hovering over it, and I didn't pull the trigger, and I probably wouldn't have got it anyway based on how quickly things were selling out. But there were a couple 4K TVs that were, man, they were really great deals. But
yeah, I didn't look at the specs on all of them. I know they had a Samsung deal for like $1,000, and it also came with a hard drive loaded with some movies and some documentaries. That
they had some.
I was tempted to buy that.
They had a Vizio one that I mean, it's not the best 4K TV, but it doesn't get horrible reviews, and it was like $600.
Man, it's amazing to think like a year ago these were still like $3,000, $5,000, and the cheap ones were like $1,500.
Yeah.
And now we're talking sub $1,000 for 4K.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're going to see tons of deals come Christmas time. Several sub $1,000 deals on 4K TVs. So I still don't know if it's really worthwhile. There's really not programming out there for it. So
yeah.
It kind of becomes, do you really need that? Not really.
Maybe future proof?
Yeah, I guess. But you know, there again, there hasn't been a standard agreed upon on how they're going to deliver that 4K content. So
well, that's true. And maybe hardcore gamers, it would be a benefit.
Yeah,
because I know the PlayStation 4 does 4K. Does the Xbox One do 4K?
It doesn't. Nope.
No, it doesn't. So
no. I mean, you could hook a PC up to it. So
yeah, I suppose that's
right?
True. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, you could. It would make a heck of a monitor, right? If nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, you might want to sit a little farther away from that than what I do. But
like a 50-inch 4K monitor, I could handle that. Just put it up on the wall. It would be immersive.
Okay, we can talk about bacon. We got through that a lot quicker than I thought we would. So I found this article. Researchers at Oregon State University have patented a new strand of succulent. I like that they use succulent.
Succulent.
Red marine algae. That happens to taste like bacon when it's cooked.
Okay, researchers, I will give you my address off the air. Send me all of your succulents because I need something that tastes exactly like bacon when it's cooked that is not bacon and going to kill me.
So this is a seaweed, basically.
Yeah.
And it's protein packed. It grows extraordinarily fast and wild along the Pacific and Atlantic coastlines. It's been sold for centuries in dried form around Europe and used in cooking as a nutritional supplement. But what they found was if they take this, and albeit, we're going to take this really good for you thing and say, when you fry it.
It tastes like bacon?
It tastes just like freaking bacon. It gets crispy and
tasty. For centuries, nobody had thought maybe I'll deep fry some of this?
Yeah, no, apparently not.
Wow.
So apparently it looks like a translucent red lettuce.
Okay, so maybe there's some like visual things to get past there.
Yeah, but apparently it is it has they're calling it a superfood because it has so many minerals, vitamins, antioxidants, and 16% of protein in weight.
Wow, and you have here that it has twice the nutritional value of kale, which is like ridiculous because isn't kale like the best thing you can put into your body?
Pretty much, except for this stuff, which tastes like bacon.
And you know. F you, kale. You suck. You don't taste good. You might be good for me, but move over because there's something meatier. It's your bacon, cousin.
Yeah. So pretty excited about that. I mean, yeah, you still have to fry it, but you know, you got to imagine that fried seaweed's still better for you than fried bacon, right?
Yeah. So was there anything in the article that says when you might be able to mosey down to your local green grocer and get some of this? Because I want to try it.
It didn't, but I gotta think, I mean, based on everything that I read, it seemed like this was something that was a done deal. So I imagine like health food stores, maybe?
Huh. But you don't know what it's called, like specifically.
No.
Like I just want the bacon weed, which admittedly is a pretty good name. I'll have some bacon weed, please.
Just say you want the bacon flavored red algae.
Packed with nutrition.
Yeah. That's all I got for you, man. But I just was excited because, you know,
bacon. I'm excited, too.
Makes me want to go eat bacon. You know what you could do? You could make a sandwich with bacon, and this is your lettuce.
It's bacon to the power of bacon. Then you can wrap that whole thing in a pork belly and deep fry it. Well, do you want to do a couple of little housekeeping tidbits that you have here, and then we'll start wrapping it up?
Yeah, I found a couple of little these are just little mentions, but in case you didn't happen to see it on the internet.
I haven't seen any of these. I'm kind of interested.
I kind of found them somewhat interesting. So the Google self-driving car had its first accident resulting in a, I guess, minor injury.
Yeah, and they've had a couple of accidents, right? But nobody's been hurt yet, right?
Right. So this one, they had four people that ended up going to the hospital. They had three minor cases of whiplash. The person that actually hit the... So let me go back. The Google self-driving car, it was on a Lexus SUV that they had the self-driving kit put on.
Fancy. And
it got rear-ended while sitting at a red stoplight.
Well, it's that damn computer.
So... Obviously, no fault of the AI. They just got rear-ended. But the three Google employees that were passengers in the vehicle suffered minor cases of whiplash. The person that hit them had some contusions on their face. Their airbag went off.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously they were going fast enough that they hit the car, you know.
Enough to set off the airbag.
Yeah, airbag go off. So, you know, again, no fault of the AI, but still interesting that they had their first accident resulting in an injury. Another interesting article that I read about, apparently, the gaming, so esports is what they're calling it, has started to have a doping problem.
Yeah, like steroids?
No, so like the video gamers apparently are taking Adderall like it's candy. And
really? That's kind of genius if you think about it.
Yeah, so one of the top Counter-Strike players admitted that there is a huge problem, and that apparently there was a group called Cloud9 that was a team at a Counter-Strike competition that got called out for popping Ritalin, and Corey Friesen is this guy's name, that's one of the top players, said that was funny because we all take Adderall.
Huh.
So Adderall, for those of you who don't know, it's normally taken for ADHD.
Right.
And what they're saying is it helps the players concentrate, reduces fatigue, and actually has shown to boost reaction times.
Well, it's basically speed, right?
It basically is. So, you know, it begs the question is, are we going to start seeing drug testing in esports or video game competitions?
So how does that work, though? Because, okay, so if you are a baseball player and you take, I don't know, some sort of an anabolic steroid, obviously they can test for that and they can say this is a banned substance.
Right.
You're out. But if you are a gamer, well, it's entirely possible that someone who has an attention deficit disorder would potentially be a professional gamer, and they may have a legitimate need for it, and it might not give them the edge that it would give to someone who doesn't. So how does that work? It sounds like it's going to cause all kinds of upset in the world of professional esports.
Well, you know, we're kind of saying all this tongue in cheek, but there's some serious ass money involved in these things.
There is. I mean going like, all the way back to like the Quake tournaments where, I can't think of his name. What is his name? He ended up getting CarMax Ferrari for winning one of the early Quake tournaments.
But yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point, and Adderall taken by someone who truly has ADHD doesn't have these necessarily, you know, reduced fatigue effects and that kind of thing. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but you do have to question. I mean, you know, if people are taking a substance and it's, you know, increasing their ability to play the game over someone who isn't taking them, that's not fair competition, right?
So yeah,
either you make
not.
Everyone pop Adderall. Or you ban it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Well, and you know, beyond just games, I know it's a huge problem in schools, and it's a huge problem among young workers, especially in industries where it's expected that you put in the 80 and 90 hour weeks and grind hard. They're all taking these drugs to keep themselves going, and it is a big problem. Now, I'm on the other side of the coin. I think sports should be like fully, you know, fully modified, like you can do anything to your body to gain an edge. I want to see football players just like killing other football players because they've just taken, you know, bull steroids and they weigh 800 pounds and they're just nothing but muscle. I want to see my e-gamers just like twitching like little balls of nerves. I think that would be great. I mean, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah.
Is there really such a thing as a natural athlete anymore?
I honestly don't know. And you know, it brings up when you look at someone like Babe Ruth, who, you know, hit so many home runs and stuff. I mean, that dude, like, he was chewing on that bacon sandwich we were talking about
right
before he went up to the plate and wiping his grease off on his, you know, uniform and then hitting a home run. And it's not like it is now. I mean, yeah. They had no nutrition. They had no weightlifting, nothing.
A bacon sandwich for lunch and a martini, and I'm ready to go play ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then the final little tidbit one I had, and this is literally just one line, but I thought it was kind of interesting. The 2016 Toyota Tacoma, which is a pickup truck, is coming standard with a GoPro mount on the front.
Really? Like out on the bumper?
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. It's interesting how much GoPro has permeated popular culture like that.
Yeah. So if you get a 2016 Toyota Tacoma and you're out there off the road and in the mud and the stuff, then you can put a GoPro right on the front and record away.
But interestingly, it does not actually come with a GoPro.
No, just the mount.
Huh. I wonder how long it'll be until that is a deal. The Toyota Tacoma GoPro deal.
Yeah, maybe.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, very interesting. Well, that's a jam-packed show of little stuff, Jeff.
Yeah.
I think it's probably time to talk about what we love and wrap it up for the day.
Okay, well, let me tell you what I love, Jacob.
Tell me what you love.
There's this little app that I found called Nightstand. You know, I built my little watch and phone charger that I have sitting next to my bed. And I was like looking for something that would just be like a clock at all times when I plug my phone in. And okay. I found this app, and it's free to try. And then there's an in-app purchase if you want to buy it that takes away ads, which, you know, I used it for like a week and decided, yep, I like it well enough. I'm going to pay the $1.99. It's a neat little app. It just, it almost reminds me of an Android widget. It has like a background and like a flip style clock and shows the weather on it.
Okay.
And it keeps the phone on all night. It's dimmable. So you can swipe your finger up and down on the screen. Down makes it get, you know, more dim. Up makes it brighter. So that's kind of nice because I can dim it way down at night.
Sure.
It does have built-in alarm clock functionality that acts outside your Apple. I still just use the Apple alarm clock, but it does allow you to pick songs. And, you know, it also has like a music with, a sleep timer type thing on it. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm literally just basically using it for the alarm clock, which I find to be very nice. It
cool.
works exactly the way I want it to. So,
huh? Well, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, Nightstand.
Have you noticed any impact or anything on your battery from having the phone on, you know, all day or anything like that?
No. So like, I plug it in at night, I dim it way down so that it's, you know, not bright and keeping me up at night. And when I wake up in the morning, my phone's fully charged, so it's not eating up enough energy that it's not getting my phone charged. So,
well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So this is funny. As you were talking, my lovely girlfriend actually just texted me a picture of something from Amazon. It is waxed bacon floss. So there you go. She knows me well. She didn't even know we were going to be talking about bacon today and texted me a picture of bacon floss.
Huh. Well, there you go.
Throw that out there. Well, that's very cool. I'll check it out and see if I like it. I usually just set the alarm on my phone and that's it. I don't bother with having displays on or anything like that, but that's kind of cool. So what I love, this is kind of a neat thing. And I had no idea that these were so affordable. A few weeks ago, our family went on a little walk at one of the state parks. And as we were walking around this big pond, there were fallen tree branches out in the middle, and there were like really big turtles sunning themselves on the logs. And of course, we were trying to get a better look at the turtles, and they were, you know, way off yonder, and it was impossible to see the turtles. And my girlfriend said something to me about, hey, you know, it would be really nice if we had a pair of binoculars or something like that, because we don't have a pair of binoculars. So I went looking on the Amazon. This is actually was one of the things I looked at on Prime Day. And I actually found a pair of binoculars that were on sale. But of course, they had immediately gone to, 100% claimed and joined the wait list. And I never got the binoculars. But in doing some digging, I found a pair of compact Bushnell binoculars. It's the Bushnell PowerView 8x21 binocular. And it was only $12.99 on Amazon. So I bought them, gave them a go, and God bless you, Amazon. They showed up the same day. because Amazon is amazing like that. And I love them. It's an 8X magnification, and it has a 21 millimeter objective lens. In the process of getting these, I actually learned what the numbers on binoculars means, because I didn't know when you see binoculars what that, you know, X by Y number meant. I don't know if you know what it is, Jeff, but the first number is your magnification factor, and the second number is the objective size. So the bigger the objective, the more light the binoculars gather. So like if you want to go out and, you know, look at things at dusk or maybe do some astronomical observations, you want one with a big second number, you know, so like maybe a 10 by 50 type binocular or something like that. So I just learned you something if you didn't know that. You know, they're really nice little tiny binoculars. I think they only weigh 6 ounces. They fold up teeny tiny. They come with a little case that you can mount on your belt. And like I said, they're only $13. They work great. I am just tickled that we now have binoculars to take with us on nature walks and, you know, to stare at the neighbors. I mean, to use for astronomical observations and things like that. So if you need an inexpensive pair of binoculars that you're not going to kill yourself if you drop them or abuse them or otherwise destroy them, check them out. The Bushnell PowerView 8x21s, $13. You can't beat that with a stick. Well, you could, but you probably wouldn't want to. okay, well, I think that we are at the end of another show. We do need to thank our Patreons, our patrons. I don't know what they call themselves, for supporting the show. So thank you so much, Dennis Heinley, Jamie Brown, Kai Layton, and Todd Singer. You guys are awesome. You help make the show a little less expensive for us to put out. And that is amazing. Any of you out there who would like to go and throw us a buck or something like that can do it at our Patreon page, which we flog and plug. You can find it. I'm not going to beat that into the ground anymore. We would love for you to call and tell us or email and tell us what the song that you most dislike is. You can do that at 317-643-1212. You can send us a tweet at No Better Show. You can send us a message on our website, and that is www.nobettershow.com. Or you can send us an email, feedback@nobettershow.com. We'll read them all. We'll you know, see what you have to say. We'll add it to our list. If you've got a question, we'll address your question on the air and make you internet famous. If you like the show, we would really appreciate it if you would tell your friends, your podcast listening friends, your non-podcast listening friends, tell them about us. And if you would go and subscribe, rate, and leave a review on iTunes, that would really help us continue to grow the audience. A few kind words and a handful of stars goes a long way towards helping us out. We still have t-shirts for, I think, another week and a half. So go check out the t-shirt, imperialshirtco.com. That would be awesome. You will look great. You'll give us a couple of bucks. It is a win-win-win all the way around. You have just listened to the Know Better Than Average show, so now you should know better than average too. Thanks for tuning in. We will be back next week with another great show. In the meantime, have a great week, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening.